Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to start by asking the question, how do we make mobile a first-rate platform for software applications on the data side? How do we do that? Because I think if you look at a lot of the talk and a lot of the action that's happened so far the last 5 years or so, it feels more like people are trying to make the mobile phone a second-rate television or a second-rate hi-fi or a second-rate PC or a second-rate game console. And I don't think any medium is ever going to be a big success if it doesn't find its own heartbeat and really stand out for something that it can be the best in the world at. So how do we do that? And just to prove to you that it's possible, we happen to be in the neighborhood of Nintendo's U.S. headquarters, and they were faced with this very same question when they brought out the Nintendo DS. Now, the Nintendo DS is not a phone, but it is a mobile platform. And they had to think about what that platform would do and how it would distinguish itself from its big brother, the GameCube, which is a bigger box that's more powerful that displays on a big screen. So what did they do? Well, they could have just put Mario on it, but they didn't do that. If they had put Mario on it, it would have been a second-rate Mario, and it would have defined the Nintendo DS as a second-rate platform. And that is the very disservice that seems to be happening in many cases with the mobile phone. And I want us all to maybe embrace the belief that we can figure out what mobile is really about and try to get it to be a first-rate platform on its own merit. So I think that in addressing that question, you have to have innovation, and it has to be combined with good execution if that's going to happen. And I think a lot of the opportunity for mobile phone has to do with the fact that we're now in the era of social computing, and that spans the internet and the mobile phone. And you know, what role can the mobile phone play in that? And can the mobile phone, in fact, be the winning platform? Can we beat the internet? And you know, I think you've got the potential here for mobile to become a new kind of Starbucks. Starbucks took a very mature beverage business, and they turned it into a completely different kind of phenomenon, to the point that today, for Starbucks, their employee health benefits cost more to the company than the coffee. And yet, look at the ARPU that Starbucks generates. So there's clearly something going on there beyond just the coffee itself. Okay, well, just to give you a quick overview. For those of you that aren't familiar with Digital Chocolate, I'm going to give you a brief company snapshot. I'm going to talk about our views on how the market is growing and where that growth can go. And then I'm going to give you a couple illustrations in an area where we're innovating with what we call social applications. Okay, so these are just some milestones from the last few years. The company's about 3 years old. We were fortunate in finding some like-minded thinkers in Finland a couple of years ago, and we merged with them. And they'd already been around for a while, so that was a big help. We launched our first U.S. products about a year and a half, actually almost 2 years ago now. And we've kind of evolved over the last couple of years as we've stumbled around making lots of mistakes, figuring out which end is up. But it's a pretty experienced team now. And then we've really ramped up the business in Finland. Finland's a great place to be because, frankly, there's nowhere else to work. And there's nothing else to do, particularly in the winter when it's dark all the time. Whereas in the Bay Area, you know, where we have our other office, where I work, there's a lot of other stuff to do, and there's a lot of really cool places to work. And you know, hanging on to employees is like hanging on to a squid, I think. So we're real happy to ramp up in Finland. And again, we're really trying hard to make mobile a first-rate platform. And I think one of the things we focused on doing initially a few years ago was to try to see if we could build a good system for bringing innovative entertainment products to market. You know, instead of maybe relying on trying to force something to be a hit, or for that matter, acquiring a big property license that we thought we could make into a hit. You know, we wanted to try to see if we could become a good system for innovation and execution. And the results have been pretty good. We've now sold over 10 million game downloads. We do business in over 60 countries with over 200 channel partners. In the last year, we kind of rose to the top in terms of third-party review scores from sites like GameSpot and IGN. We also are clearly the front runners in terms of original content. If you look at what's on the carrier decks today, of course, a lot of property license product. There's a lot of generic product. By that I mean things like poker, where nobody invented poker. Poker is not unique to mobile. But obviously it's not a, quote, property license necessarily, but there's not a lot of truly original content that has been invented specifically for the mobile phone, and it's only on the mobile phone. And we're the dominant supplier of that, if you look at what's on the decks. And I also am of the opinion that relative to the Western world, because of our base of operations in Finland and the tools and technology model that we use, that we've become one of the leaders in terms of efficiency of production. And you know, we've tried to stay as far out on the cutting edge technologically as we can get. And sometimes that's the leading edge, sometimes it's the bleeding edge. Some of you know what I'm talking about. And lately, I think over the last year, we've kind of become the object in the mirror that is closer than it appears. Because a year ago, you know, we didn't really look like we were a big player in the space, and we probably had 1% market share in the U.S. And of course, a lot of the market research findings always have kind of a time lag. So every time we've seen a published research report, we know that we're actually doing better than it says because some time has elapsed. But especially this year, there has been a lot of acceleration. And I have to thank the carriers for their support with this, because we had to convince them to give deck space to unproven brands. And they were willing to do that. And what we've done through execution is create products that have originality so that they're worth talking about, and that is expanding the audience, and also that have very high quality, and that gets people to come back to the deck more frequently and to become repeat buyers. And these are things where, you know, if you're paying attention to the research findings of companies like M-Metrics, the industry has some serious issues in expanding the audience beyond a hardcore user base, and also getting even that hardcore base to buy more frequently. So we've kind of focused on that idea of increasing lifetime customer value and expanding the market with these original products. And in recent months, our share of what's being sort of greenlit and going into what's new on major US carriers, and also a share of featured place, has risen dramatically from where it was a year ago. And so far this year, according to not only our own data, but also published third-party reports, we've added deck slots faster than anybody else in the industry. And of course, this was a total cottage industry a couple years ago with, between the US and Europe. I mean, I saw a US report saying there were 243 game companies that had a game live with a carrier. And there's a lot of companies in Europe that would expand that list further. So you've got over 300 individual companies. And of course, the space has been consolidating at a fairly rapid rate. And you know, we've been moving up the rankings. So we're kind of pleased with how well that's gone. Again, it wouldn't have happened at all without great execution in Finland and the support of the carriers. But we're pleased with how it's working out. And one of our goals is to be among the leaders that are truly pure play mobile companies. I mean, when I talk to a carrier, I can say to them, if you give me a dollar, I'm going to give it back to you 10 times. Whereas if that dollar goes to a company that has a property license with Hollywood, then half of that dollar is going back to Hollywood, and it's going to get spent competing against you for the consumer dollar. And of course, that's equally true if the carriers are doing business with big media companies directly. You know, you have the same issue. The money that is leaving the mobile ecosystem is going to help competing media formats that are competing for that same consumer's attention and that same consumer dollar. And then, of course, this concept of being a pure play also applies to the investment community. You know, we're a venture-funded company, and you know, we want to get ourselves to be positioned as one of the best independent companies focused on mobile. Okay, this is just a brief summary of some of the review scores from the last year. You can kind of see several of the leading companies on this list. And I think what this kind of underscores is how hard it is to execute consistently well, and that these reviewers, they consider an 8 a great game, a 7 is good, and a 6 is average, and a 5 is bad. So obviously, if your net average score is in the 6s, that means you're probably good half the time, and you're bad half the time. And as you can see, there aren't that many companies that have an average score above 7 amongst the leading companies. So obviously, some respect needs to be given for the fact that these mobile devices, they may be humble computers with small screens and some constraints in terms of their capabilities, but it takes a real dedication and a craftsman approach to getting everything you can out of these platforms, and you can do great stuff if you're passionate enough about it. Now, this is an interesting study where we were a little frustrated in the last year, where there were these five cases where we were outflanked by shrewd marketing and salesmanship by competitors who got products featured, and we thought, hey, you know, we've got a product that we believe is better, but we weren't unable to convince the carriers of that. So we thought, well, let's go to an outside agency and do a Pepsi challenge, do kind of a blind taste test, and then ask those consumers questions like, would you be willing to pay for this? And in all five of these cases, it was kind of a blowout. And you know, I'm not really trying to put anybody down here, but it is inevitable, for example, that property licensed products are going to be lower quality for two reasons. Number one, it takes resources to get the property license. Then that means that those resources are not available to fund product development to have the best product developers. You can't really do both that effectively. This is a competitive evolutionary marketplace. Some companies are going to be really good at creating their own games and having great ideas for new products and services. Others are not. Well, which of those is going to go get the licenses? So clearly, it's a strategy to go get licenses that is frequently used by companies that don't really know how to make a great game, and they don't have the conviction that they can, so they go get a property license, and they have less money left over, and it shows up in the game. And this has been going on in the game industry on every platform for the last 30 years. Probably the most famous example was Atari had a big success in 1981 with Pac-Man. And then they decided to follow up on that by releasing a game based on the hottest movie of the year, which was E.T. And they built a huge amount of inventory, figuring they were going to sell just as many as they had with Pac-Man. And that inventory was part of the demise of Atari, and it ended up being buried in a landfill site in Arizona. And this has just been going on since the very beginning. And so these results are not terribly surprising. And I think in some cases, you have a little bit of surprise where a consumer maybe knows a brand from another platform. It doesn't necessarily have to be a movie, but it could be a console game where the definition of that brand is embodied in the immersive 3D technology that consoles allow for, and the 2 or 3 hour game sessions that are part of the tempo of console gaming. And if that customer is looking for that brand on mobile, they're gonna have a very hard time getting that experience on a mobile device. And so that's gonna create a disappointment, and it's gonna lead to a lower score. Obviously, if what the carriers do, if they feature products that are gonna create that kind of disappointment, it's gonna, number one, drive customers away. And number two, if they're going to say anything to their friends at all, it's going to be bad. And I think many of us have seen a lot of these studies in the last several months where they're talking to the public and they're finding out that, yeah, the public generally has a perception that mobile games aren't very good. And I know there was a study announced just a few days ago that a huge percentage of mobile users tried to look at data services on their handset related to the World Cup. And something like 44% that tried were very disappointed and won't do it again. So it's very important for the industry as a whole to raise the execution to a higher level. Okay, I'm not going to dwell on this, but just to give you a quick visual sense of what some of our products look like, this is a game called Tower Blocks that's won a bunch of awards. It's a real simple one-button mechanic where you're stacking the stories of a building, and as the building gets higher, more people parachute in on their umbrellas to stay in your building. You get points for how many people you have and how many stories you have and how perfectly you line it up. And then there's also a strategy mode where you can build a whole city if you have more time. So this is kind of consistent with our motto of seize the minute. You know, we know that when you're mobile, the tempo and rhythm of mobile lifestyle, which preoccupies all of us now, is that you've got these slices of time, and the entertainment experience has to be designed to not only fit those small slices of time, but also fit different sized slices of time. Another example, I think, that kind of tunes into the market demographic, and you know, again, I think we're in a phase now where market segmentation can be done. You know, we don't want to think of the mobile user as one size fits all. So here you have a product where clearly the youth market who enjoys going to nightclubs and is really into music. I mean, here's a sim where it's not a juvenile theme like a lemonade stand, and it's not a really ambitious PC type simulation. It's a very simple casual thing you do on your handset where you get to run a nightclub and control the playlist and choose your DJ and stuff like that. Okay, shifting to the market, I don't think you need to worry too much about guys that are saying that the mobile game market is full of problems and it's not growing fast enough, et cetera. The fundamental truth here is that this is going to be really, really big, and you just wait another 5 or 10 years and it's going to be orders of magnitude bigger than it is now. We may have some growing pains to get through, but every country that has introduced these data services and that has had them around longer than the U.S. has gone to higher levels. I mean, for example, you see the data ARPU here for Japan, and you would see the same thing if we broke at 3G services separately. The ARPU on 3G services is substantially higher. And even the U.S. number is growing rapidly. You see it more than doubled last year. And I'll just use SMS messaging as an example. As many of you know, SMS was not built with the intention that it would become a consumer service. It was a technical layer to be used by technicians for testing the network. And then it turned into a consumer platform. But probably a lot of people, when they first heard about SMS or looked at it, they thought, you're kidding me. You want me to do what? Triple tap? And I'm going to type on this tiny little keyboard and I'm going to send messages to people and they're going to send messages back? I don't think so. There are a lot of skeptics about it, just like there are a lot of skeptics about ringtones. And even in the U.S., 2 years ago, after SMS had become a gigantic global phenomenon, experts in the U.S. were saying it's not going to happen in the U.S. because we'd rather talk, and we're going to do push-to-talk, and we've got email, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, but we're not going to do SMS. Well, in the last year, over 100 billion messages have washed up on U.S. shores. I mean, that is kind of a miss. You know, if you're the guy that said it wasn't going to happen, you were only off by about 100 billion, just a little. You know, so clearly, there's something very profound going on here. And even though the percentage of people that are downloading games, you know, you see these research reports saying that that is between 3 and 6% of the user base. You know, I think you have to expect this customer to gradually proceed through stages where, you know, day one, they don't even know that it's more than a phone. And when they cross the data threshold, it's going to be to use the WAP browser and to use SMS. And then they're going to get into more advanced applications later on. And of course, you know, ringtones is going to be first, and then they're going to look at things like Java and Brew applications. But right now, for example, there are 10 times more people in the U.S. that have used SMS and WAP than the number that have downloaded a game. And again, to me, it's just part of this migration of the herd. It doesn't mean that in the future only 3% of the world's population is going to buy applications. It'll just take them a little while to get there. Something else about the market that's proving true is that it's a casual market. You know, hardcore video gamers represent about 5% of the world's population. I'll give you an example of this. 140 million people watch the Super Bowl in the U.S. And about 5% of those people buy Madden football. And Madden is the most successful sports video game of all time. But the other 95% are at a Super Bowl party watching the Super Bowl. So clearly, they care about games. They're watching one. But, you know, obviously, there's a disconnect in that most of those consumers apparently don't want to do something as demanding and immersive as a classic hardcore video game. And what's ironic is that this mass market that all has mobile phones, even in that audience, that hardcore user wants to play casual games when they're mobile, because if they're smart, they actually know that they can't get the same experience out of those hardcore brands, and they don't have enough time to really have that experience anyway. And I mentioned Hardcore Steve here because one of the carriers told us about consumer research that they had done where there was a guy in a focus group, and they just named him Hardcore Steve, and he was talking about, yeah, you know, I like to sit down at home on my Xbox and play several hours of Grand Theft Auto. And this guy had body piercings and a mohawk and tattoos and, you know, just a really hardcore guy. And then they got him talking about what he did on mobile, and they said that he profiled like a metrosexual and that he was playing all the girly puzzle games. You know, so it just goes to show that if Hardcore Steve can, you know, pop bubbles when he's on his mobile phone, you know, it shows you that you're going to get him, but then you're also going to get the other 95% of the world that, you know, is maybe willing to pop some bubbles but doesn't want to get into something really, really deep and sophisticated. So in the short term, you know, I think there are a bunch of things that are going to help grow the market. In particular, there's a lot of potential here around trying to unlock the potential of mobile to be more like the internet. The internet has viral discovery and free trial, and we don't really have that working for mobile as well as it could or as well as it should. And there are a lot of these short-term growth opportunities. And then looking at longer term, I think you're going to see a gradual shift as the carriers generate more and more of their revenue and more of their growth from the data side. They'll start to tilt the corporate marketing budgets more to the data side. I think that's probably one of the big reasons why Docomo was so successful in Japan was they went to the public and they explained what the data services were all about and educated them about it. Whereas I think in the West, for the most part, the big carriers are still battling over the voice business, and that's been a good business and it's been a growing business, but it's obviously maturing and data is growing a lot faster. I think also we're in a climate here where there's opportunity in the next few years for the buzz from original products and services for mobile to start turning into brand power, and that'll help grow the market. You're going to see these new service models like the social apps that I'm going to talk about, and also as we get to better networks, better handsets, and even things like Wi-Fi, the quality of the experience, whether you're shopping and you're dealing with the merchandising performance or you're actually using applications and playing games and communicating, it's going to get so much better. And then we still have more business models that will be brought to bear. And of course, for those of us that are in the Western world, there's a lot of growth opportunities in Asia. So there's all kinds of growth potential out there. Okay, now to shift gears and talk about social applications. If you look at what mobile is really good for, it's not really a content story like a television or a hi-fi. Basically, 99% of total mobile revenue is around social applications. And it's obviously dominated by voice, but the part of it that's data is dominated by messaging. And even these other behaviors like personalization, changing your ringtone, changing your screen, it's driven by social identity. So, you know, if what's really going on here is that people are spending all this money based on social need, what is behind that? They're not looking at mobile as a content platform where they just want to kill time and be amused. They're looking for social benefit. And I think the reason for that is that until not too long ago, everybody lived in a small village. And they had a perfect social life. They spent the whole day with their family. They saw the same intimate friends every day. And now we've got modern life where we're all very mobile and we work here and we play there and we sleep there and we're in this urban environment. We're spending a lot of time in our car. We've got maybe a high-rise apartment and a television, and our social community is much more of a challenge. And so people have lost that intimate village. They've lost that social life. And so that's really what they're looking for. And what we also have to thank here from the evidence so far is that customers, if they get social value, they're willing to have it even when there's not a lot of fidelity present. And considering that the mobile phone will always be a small box with a small screen compared to other platforms, that's kind of a relief for the future growth of the industry. At any rate, for all of these reasons, you know, I came a few years ago to think of the mobile phone as the social computer and recognize that there's going to be this battle between the internet, where you've seen social communities and chat and dating and instant messaging and so on, and you've got mobile, where we've seen the phenomenon of SMS and personalization. And, you know, they're going to be sort of battling for supremacy as the social computer. And I think because of the ubiquity, everybody's got a mobile phone, and everybody knows that if you communicate with somebody, they've got one with them. And you've got this seamless billing platform that's provided by the carriers, and we're all part of a mobile lifestyle. I mean, you can really make the argument that mobile is going to be the winning platform. So what we want to do is try to figure out how to help people recreate their lost village with new mobile virtual villages. And what also kind of reinforces this is that in the last 100 years, if you look at all of the content media, I know the Hollywood industries, they don't talk about ARPU, but if they did, they would say that any form of content media in history has tended to have $3 to $15 a month in user spending per month. Whereas now we've seen several instances, including mobile email and mobile voice, where on a different business model, customers are paying 10 times more money because they have access to a network that reduces loneliness and creates social value for them. So this is an area where there's a lot of upside for us. So that's what we're interested in trying to do now, is to build a new kind of game that's really more of a social community and take both personalization and messaging to the next level. And again, the point here isn't so much about the gameplay. It's more about sharing with friends and meeting new people. So what do guys like to talk about? They like to talk about sports. So the first one of these we created, it's called Mobile League Sports Network, or MLSN Sports Picks. It's a real simple application. Again, just one button, pretty much. You have to answer 5 questions about upcoming sports events. You check in later, you get the results. If you did well, you get a little trophy. There's a bunch of leaderboards. You can also create your own private league and invite your friends to join it. And we provide a viral capability of sending an SMS with a WAP link in it that your friend can use to get a deep link back into their carrier deck to obtain the product. And then, of course, we also have on advanced handsets messaging built into the application. So, you know, this helps drive viral participation because a user can receive an SMS kind of reminding them to get back in and play. Okay, the that system, by the way, is just launched on major carriers in the last few months. The next one is called the Hookup Ava Flurrying. So this is targeting the youth and singles market. Of course, these are the customers that are doing all the SMS and doing all the MySpace.com and are, you know, interested in dating, obviously. And we started with the idea of avatars and said, what can we do to make that more interesting? So you've got the bare bones things like deciding what your avatar looks like and dressing it up and changing its fashion and sending an MMS so that your friend gets a happy birthday greeting from your happy avatar. But we took it further than that by saying, how about if the avatars are grown-up Tamagotchi that have their own social life and they go on dates with other avatars? And then what if at some point you have the ability to go steady with another avatar and then eventually start being friends and start communicating with the owner of that other avatar? And who knows where that might lead? Of course, I know exactly where it might lead because 10 years ago, I launched an internet a fantasy role-playing game that was one of the first massively multiplayer online games. And this is a hardcore role-playing game. And yet, after a while, we found that people were arranging to have their characters get married to other characters in the game. You know, it had nothing to do with the game. And this is an expensive game to play, by the way. And it was for hardcore gamers, typically male. And yet, there was enough women in this, and these characters were getting married. And then we find out later that in several cases, the real people behind the avatars got married. So we're talking here about serving a far more fundamental human need than just killing time being amused, and that's why it's worth so much more money. So there's a lot of features in this system. I'm just trying to give you a quick visual sense of it, but this will be coming out towards the end of the summer and rolling out this fall. Okay, and kind of looking at what we're doing, I'd like to claim that this is really a different business model because we're not talking about just sort of a bare bones SMS chat service. We're not talking about just a traditional game with a leaderboard or head-to-head multiplayer gaming. There's a number of new capabilities and new features in the business model that are being supported here. I really think this is a new segment of the market that will emerge and have a lot of growth over the next several years. So, you know, in conclusion, we really believe mobile can be a first-rate platform. It's again, it's just a matter of trying to figure out what does that user need help with when they're mobile. We're happy with the progress that we've made so far. We're in the era of social computing. We think these new social applications are going to be a big deal. You know, I think you can look at the current state of data applications and the merchandising environment of them as kind of like McDonald's. You know, it's individual transactions for these one-off purchases. And just like with McDonald's, customers want to get in and get out of there as fast as possible. People do not want to linger in a McDonald's. Whereas with Starbucks, something different happened there is they created what we call personalization. So you feel kind of special when you go in there to order your beverage. And you also appreciate the social environment they created, which is a warm and friendly social environment. You tend to recognize people you've seen before. They've essentially created a new kind of village that's in the real world, not in the virtual world. But we can do the same thing with mobile. And on an earlier slide, you know, pointed out that in the U.S., as recently as 2004, the data ARPU was only $2, and then it doubled the next year to over $4, while voice is $50. Well, in Japan, the data ARPU is already up around $25, and 3G services in the U.S. sometimes are doing $15 to $20. So you can just tell that we're on a track where if we keep it up and we keep doing some good things to accelerate that growth, we can get the mobile data revenue to equal the voice revenue. Last year, the voice revenue was $116 billion in the U.S., so that would be a lot of upside, particularly when you look at it globally. Thanks very much.